So I was one of those cancer patients that received some blood, so I felt great afterwards. So do give if you can. So my name is Dr. Gary, and this is a center update, an opportunity for me to share a bit about what goes on behind the scenes. Sometimes things aren't apparent to everyone who comes on Sunday, and so it's basically from the context of the organization and how we are trying to evolve the organization to the next level. And so before I begin, I just want to mention that we had a great picnic last Sunday. Many of you were there, and want to just honor and thank everyone who is involved in some aspect of making that celebration possible. So if you are involved in making that picnic a special event, raise your hand so we can appreciate you. Look around and see all the people that were involved. And we even had people in tears because of the picnic, how awesome it was. Of course, they were cutting the onions, but anyway, you get credit for that sort of thing. Anyway, so I've been talking about how 9 out of 10 churches are in decline, and now I want to shift the conversation to the 10% of churches that are thriving. And for you to know that your leadership is putting an extended effort in being in that upper 10%. And so it's important that we all understand the characteristics of what those ministries do differently than the 9 out of 10 that are in decline. And so what I want to share today is that one of the things that is done differently in the 10% that are thriving is youth ministry. And in other words, there is an ownership of no understanding that our youth ministry is vital to the well-being of our entire spiritual community. And we do have a significant ministry with respect to our youth, and we have dedicated youth instructors and teachers, and we have a significant amount of those who are in our church participating in that, but it's not thriving the way it needs to thrive because it's missing some important components. And what's missing for them these days is more adults participating in the ministry. Not so much in terms of teaching or educating our youth, but to be a presence. If Jane was up here, I would have her come up and talk about sacred safety. And we're required, in order to make sure that we're a healthy, safe organization, to have a number of adults as well as a teacher within every class. And because we lack having the proper amount of adults, we are constricted with respect to how our youth ministry can evolve and thrive. So I share this because the invitation is not just for the people who have kids to consider participating in the youth ministry, but for those of us who don't. Understanding that until our youth ministry thrives, we're not a magnet for the young families, the young people, to come and really invigorate our ministry. I mentioned a couple times ago that part of what the 10% are doing, that the other 90% of churches, they're being able to appeal to the millennials, the young people that have families and kids. And while we're primarily a vintage congregation for the most part, we want to acknowledge that unless we are welcoming for young families and people who really are looking to have a spiritual community, and unless that youth and family ministry is thriving, then we have some work to do. So we do want to be in the 10% that are thriving, right? Yes, okay. And so we want to be doing the things that are already proven to be a part of the chemistry, the energetic field of a thriving ministry. So that's all I have for today. And so it's time for getting ready for a meditation. Thank you.
So let's take a few minutes now in meditation. I'll invite you to put down anything that you might be holding. Get comfortable in your chairs. And let's just give ourselves permission to relax into the presence, to relax into the Spirit of God. And if you're new to meditation, it's nothing more than getting quiet and turning inside and getting in touch with the presence of God. So we breathe. We just breathe. It's the most basic, the most fundamental part of life. We just breathe. And as we draw in that breath, it calms us. And in spite of all the challenges of life that we're going through, it gives us a peace. Just a peace that passes all understanding. And so often we say that the Spirit of God is within us. And it is. But for the next few minutes, let's focus on the Spirit of God flowing through us. The Spirit of God flows through us. Imagine that presence of God, that Spirit of the divine, starting in our stomachs and just moving up and flowing through us, up to our chest, to our necks, up to our heads, and to our minds. The Spirit of God flows through us. And everywhere it touches, it brings peace. And it brings gentleness. And that Spirit of God flowing through us reminds us we are an expression of God. We are an expression of the Spirit of God. And so there is a part of us that's perfect and whole and complete. And we turn our conscious focus to that. Spirit of God flows through us and it reminds us we are one with God. We are divine perfection. And we hold that memory. Let's hold that in the silence for a moment. That remembrance of who and what we are. Spirit of God, just help me remember my spiritual identity. Help me remember the truth of me, that I am divine perfection, because I so easily forget. And thank you for the Spirit of God that brings me peace. It makes no sense. It brings me peace that passes all understanding. And so we say thank you, God. And so it is. Amen.
So just a couple things before I get started. First of all, Reverend Dr. Jane is traveling today. This afternoon she'll be making her way back to Spokane. She's spent the weekend in Southern California presenting as a presenter to a group of Unity folks who are interested in thriving youth ministry. Just think about that. Anyway, so that's where she is, and she'll be back next Sunday. And I'll be gone next Sunday because I'll be in Santa Barbara teaching ministry leaders how to have thriving ministries. Anyway, that's what's going on with the other half of your ministerial team. And then the other thing I need to share is that I just had cataract surgery on this eye, and so there's a weird thing going on with my vision, and it's affecting me. And you know, this is just a piece of plastic now. This eye is now the better eye than this eye, except that this eye was the dominant eye because this eye was so bad, and my brain decided to make this eye the default eye. So you see my now I'm having to retrain my brain to go to this eye, this optic nerve. Anyway, it's all screwed up. So I was told the first service it affected how long I spoke. That's how bad it was. But I think people were messing with me. I still think there's some residual there for that. Well, let's see. I'm still in the Making Your Mind Matter series, which is a euphemism. Whenever Gary does a series, a long series like this, it really means he doesn't know what he's going to talk about from one week to the next. Which is not a bad thing because it means that I wait for inspiration. I wait for something to come through that I feel is really a passion within me that wants to come forth. And so that's how I feel today. I feel very passionate with respect to what I'm about to share. We're looking at manifesting. Today's talk is called Manifesting 1.0 because there's Manifesting 2.0 and 3.0 and so on and so forth. I thought I was going to talk about quantum science last time. That's where I left off with you. But what's coming through is folks have been coming up to me and saying, when are we going to learn how to manifest our heart's desire? Anybody ready for that, by the way? You ready? Okay. So what we need to know is that right now we're already masters at manifesting our life. Because right now we're each creating our own personal reality. Whether we understand the mechanics of that process or not, we are manifesting how we be with what we're having as our life experience. Now, the reason why I say it that way is because that's the pivotal piece. Is how we be with what we're having determines how our life is with us instead of the other way around. Rather than think that how our life is determines how we feel about things, let us begin to understand that the real magic, the real superpower that we possess is our capacity to be with whatever we're having out of the place within ourselves that is our wholeness. The place within ourself that is the truth of us. Bless you. So, in addition to this being a talk on manifesting, this is also the beginning of spirit groups, those groups that are working with the content of the Sunday service as a part of their discussion. So, some of you will be in spirit groups that will have the Sunday talk be what you're going to discuss. And so for those of you who are in one of those groups, I'm going to give you your discussion questions now so you can be listening in the context of the talk so that you'll be prepared for when you go to those groups, you'll be prepared to discuss what I talked about. Yes, okay. All right, so there's Tara there, so she's... So the first thing that you're going to discuss is how... So this is my problem now. I can't even see with my good glasses. How does not enough, unworthiness, and inadequacy show up in your life? Okay, because when we don't understand how those things show up in our life, we mistakenly believe that our life happens to us. And so when we have insufficiency or lack, when we have circumstances that, you know, make us feel defeated or not good enough, we believe that it's because of what we're having as opposed to how we're being with our experience. And so when we understand that when we have insufficiency in our life, it's really a mirror unto that part of ourself that is living in the belief of not enough, when we understand that that's the principle, then we don't react so much to what we're having. We begin to become curious to how is it possible that I'm believing that I'm not enough? And where did I take on that belief? And so in your spirit groups, you need to answer the question, how does not enough show up in your life? Does it show up as not enough money? Anybody have not enough show up as not enough money? Does it show up as not enough time? Anybody have not enough show up and is not enough time? Not enough creativity, you name it. But the point is that if we don't identify where our limiting beliefs show up and therefore run us, then we are believing that the source of our well-being or the source of our discomfort is out there in the situations as opposed to how we're being with what we're having. So this is not new to many of you, but for those who are just joining us in recent months, it may be a new concept. And as we continue with this, we need also be in the question, is that if I knew I could not fail, if I just knew that I could not fail, what greater good would I want to draw into my life? What specific greater good would I want to draw into my life? It's like thinking about what would it look like for me to evolve to the next level. Most of the time when we think about evolving or getting to the next level, we think about it in terms of having less of something or more of something that we don't have. We want to move away from our discomfort. That's how we order our well-being and worth in the context of not having this feeling of lack or not having this feeling of failure or not having something that we're feeling as opposed to moving towards our greater good, because it's in the context of who and what we've come here to be as spiritual beings. And so this is an important question to ask if we're interested in evolving, getting to the next level. And then what does more than enough feel like? Or what does feeling capable or deserving or worthy feel like? Because if we cannot generate the felt sense of those states of being, it's very difficult to pull it off in real life. So these are questions for you to take in your spirit groups and discuss this next week. And then Jane will have another set of questions for you, and so on and so forth. And so I'm excited about this because it gives us a way of amplifying the transformative effect of what we're about. So your ministry is about transformation. Our mission is about transforming lives and inspiring people to make a positive difference in the world. It's less about trying to make you feel better, more about giving you the tools to transform your life so you can get to a healthier place. Now, Jesus said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things shall be added unto you." Are you familiar with that statement?
Yeah.
And now, what does he mean by the kingdom of God? That's what we're supposed to be looking for first. Okay, so I'll give you the answer that I've kind of come up with, okay, rather than you having to guess it. So the kingdom of God is Jesus' technical term. It's his terminology to describe a way of being with whatever you're having that enables you to be with it in such a way as you unleash the field of infinite possibilities in the context of all things working together for the greater good, where nothing and no one is against you, where you are able to use whatever you're having to bring forth who and what you've come here to be, your purpose and your passion. So if we think about what is this way that I can be with whatever I'm having, regardless of how it looks or feels, that I can take whatever it is, whether it be lack or some disease or something that is unpleasant, and be able to use it in such a way as that I actually bring forth my purpose and passion. So that's what we're trying to find out. That's what we're trying to figure out. How do I be in that way of being with what I'm having that unleashes that energetic field of possibilities. And so I'm going to suggest that one of the ways that is ultimately linked to our manifesting a greater good in our life has to do with being with whatever we're having out of the context of our passion and purpose, which is an important key with respect to manifesting your greater good. So if, for instance, part of the problem is we manifest regardless, mostly unconsciously, but the manifestation or the personal reality that we create doesn't necessarily work for us all the time, what if we were to, instead of manifesting from those unconscious patterns, manifest from the conscious intention to bring forth our passion and purpose? So that's where we're going in the context of learning how to shift out of manifesting unconsciously to manifesting consciously. So that's where we're going in this conversation, and I'll interrupt your train of thought from time to time with some comments. So I've told this story before. It's the autobiography of 5 short chapters of a person sort of describing the spiritual journey, the spiritual process. And this is important with respect to manifesting consciously. So chapter 1, I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm hopeless. It's not my fault. And then it says, it takes me a long time to find a way out. And so sometimes we're in this, especially early on when we first just learning about how our mind contributes to what we're having as our life experience, we find ourselves falling into some situation or predicament and feeling like a victim. Have you ever felt like a victim before? And what we understand is that whenever we feel like a victim, it's always going to take a long time to get out of the hole that we're in, almost universally. Chapter 2, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend this time I don't see it. I fall in again, and I can't believe that I'm in the same place. That's right. It's not my fault still. And then it still takes me a long time to get out. And so a lot of us find ourselves in this situation too, here we are again. Think about a life pattern in your life. Think about your sense of not enough and how it shows up in your life as insufficiency or lack. And don't you find yourself sometimes blaming the world, blaming the economy, blaming politics, blaming something? There's some reason outside of yourself why there's not enough. And it takes a long time to get out of that kind of context for yourself. And then there's chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it this time, but I still fall into it. I mean, what's up with that? Have you ever watched yourself do the same thing? Here I go again. I can't believe I'm doing that very same thing. Well, and then it takes, I still fall in, but now I know where I am, and now I get out pretty quickly. And I think this is where a lot of us are. Here at Unity Spiritual Center, we acknowledge that we have life patterns, and we acknowledge that we're doing it to ourselves. I mean, it's called self-inflicted discomfort. All of us are familiar with that, I think. But the point is that we see it as a pattern, but knowing that it's a pattern in our life, it's not the truth of who we are, it's much easier to get out of that. It's much easier to shift. And then there's chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk, and I walk around it. Yay! And then there's chapter 5. I walk down a different street. Okay, so this is the key to manifesting consciously. We have to begin by first identifying the life patterns that run us unconsciously. And we have to see the struggle we put ourselves through. And then we have to learn that it's connected to some limiting belief within ourselves, that's really the issue. then we recognize that we connect the dots between that limiting belief and what we're having as our external life experience. And then we decide, well, I'm going to work on the limiting belief instead of trying to fix what's going on out here. And then what happens is that we're conscious of our limiting belief and we know that we're not going to fall in this hole again. But you see, the ultimate shift is walking down a different street. And so that's what we want to be focusing on. How can we do things differently? And if differently means being conscious instead of unconscious, what does that mean in terms of our spiritual practice and the effort that it takes to be able to shift the energy?
So now, every time you have a thought, you make a chemical. And if you have a great thought, or an unlimited thought, or a joyful thought, you turn on a set of circuits in your brain that fires in a very specific sequence, pattern, and combination that produces a level of mind that turns on another part of the brain that makes a chemical for you to begin to feel exactly the way you were just thinking, great or unlimited or joyful. Now, if you have a negative thought or an unhappy thought or a self-depreciating thought, you turn on a different set of circuits and a different combination, a different sequence, and a different pattern that produces a different level of mind. And the brain then begins to make a different batch of chemicals that signals the body for you to begin to feel exactly the way you were just thinking, negative or unhappy or unworthy. So the moment you begin to feel the way you think, because the brain is in constant communication with your body, you begin to think the way you feel, which makes more chemicals for you to feel the way you think. And then you think the way you feel, and then you feel the way you think, and then you think the way you feel. And some people do this for 20 or 30 or 40 years. Now, the redundancy of that cycle over time creates what I call a state of being. And a state of being is when your mind and body are working together, or your thoughts and feelings are aligned to a concept. So thoughts are the language of the brain, and feelings are the language of the body. And as people get caught in this cycle of thinking and feeling and thinking, over time, they condition their body to memorize that emotion as well as the conscious mind. And whenever the body knows as well as the mind, that's called a habit. A habit is when your body is the mind. Now, 95% of who you are by the time you're 35 years old is a set of memorized behaviors, set of emotional reactions, beliefs, perceptions, attitudes that run just like a computer program. So 5% of your conscious mind begins to work against 95% of what you've memorized.
So isn't that interesting? That 90% of us works against, because the body is memorized, works against what we intentionally want to bring into our life. Now, this is Dr. Joe Dispenza, and he's speaking at Seattle CSL, Centers for Spiritual Living. How many are familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza's work? So it's important for us to understand that our bodies, your body follows your mind to fulfill an emotional destiny that you have rehearsed. So part of the challenge of manifesting consciously is that our body-mind has its own way of being that's been conditioned, that it's rehearsed, that it's learned. So part of those life patterns, part of the things that were challenged, are part of the reflex that our body has memorized. It's just the habit that we're in. And if we are to manifest a greater good in our life, we have to interrupt that pattern in some significant way. In other words, we have to, number one, make conscious what is not conscious to us so that we can see ourselves walking down that same path. Can you see how that's important? And then we have to break the habit, the addiction, so to speak, to find ourselves in the hole again, because that serves that part of us that is less than. In other words, imagine that we actually move towards the part of us that serves the less than part of us because of our habit of being that. We've rehearsed not enough. We've rehearsed inadequacy. We've rehearsed, I'm not capable or deserving. to the point where it becomes a part of our habit of being. And so therefore, we can't be with what we're having in any other way than our condition-triggered response. And that's what we have to interrupt. So the challenge is that we, our outer reality seems to inform us as to how we are and how okay we are. Have you ever felt okay or not okay because what you were having as your experience? Okay, that's a sure sign that your focus on what you're having as being your reality has eclipsed your capacity to show up in any other way contrary to what your environment is revealing to you. And so that's what we have to shift. And so as we think about our outer world, the things that we have that often define us, or at least have the capacity to alter us emotionally, we need to understand that all of these things aren't us, but there are things that we have. But because our body engages in the context of being with what all those things, there's an internal world of thoughts and feelings that produces the proper biological chemistry associated with how we're thinking and feeling about these things. Can you see how you think and feel about things condition your body to have a conditioned state or a conditioned way of showing up in your life? That when you're looking at your sense of inadequacy, that you have a tendency to feel bad because of that, and that begins to inform your thought processes, and it's almost like seeing the glass half empty causes us to problem solve out of insufficiency, instead of out of our purpose and passion. So it's important. So there are times when we use our outer world to reaffirm our addiction to lack, negativity, and guilt, and disease. So think about how you might use the events and circumstances of your life to affirm your addiction. Maybe addiction is too strong of a word, but affirm your reflex to want to push something away because it makes you feel small. Or the reflex of going towards your sense of not enough when it doesn't look like things in the outer are working for you. The point is that this is a conditioned response in us, and it's something, while problematic, is not an obstacle that we can't overcome. And so do you use your boss to reaffirm your addiction to judgment? Do you use your parents to reaffirm your addiction to guilt? Do you use money to reaffirm your addiction to lack? Your body follows your mind to fulfill the emotional destiny that you have rehearsed. And so if we are rehearsing these dynamics in our life, we are manifesting according to that dynamic. So this is not, that's nothing bad happens for us to know this. It's just that it's something that we have to be willing to work through. So the principle is that our thoughts broadcast, upload to the quantum field, and our elevated emotions is what draw things back into our life. So if we're thinking lack and we're feeling not okay, then we're drawing that into our life. And so those are the things that we need to pay attention to so that we see that those are conditioned things. They're not the truth of us.
So if you wake up in the morning and you get out of bed on the same exact side as you did the day before, you shut the alarm clock off with the same finger, you slip into your favorite slippers, you shuffle into the bathroom and you use the toilet like you always do, then you walk over to the mirror and you look at yourself to remember who you are, then you get into the shower and you wash yourself in the same routine way, then you groom yourself to look like everybody expects you to look, then you go downstairs and you drink coffee out of your favorite mug. Then you drive to work the same way as you did the day before. You see the same people that push the same emotional buttons. You do the exact thing that you know how to do and you memorize and can do so well that you're an expert at. Then you hurry up and rush home so you can hurry up and check your emails, so you could hurry up and go to bed, so you can hurry up and do it all over again. Now, here's my question. Did your brain change at all that day? We could say that you were thinking the same thoughts, performing the same actions that create the same experiences that produce the same emotions, but secretly expecting something to change in your life. Would you agree?
Isn't that what we do? And so if we are to manifest a greater good, then we have to break the habits of being the routine of ourselves that run unconsciously. So it means that we have to bring more mindfulness to everything that we do. Now, we understand this whole chain of events. I mean, just try putting on something opposite or using a different hand to brush your teeth. It feels awkward. It feels unnatural. But that awkwardness and unnatural is what rewires our neural pathways, you see. And so there has to be a capacity for us to be in the unfamiliar, the awkward, the uncertain, the non-routine of our life in order for us to generate the spaciousness of mind that allows something new to come in. So you remember a month or so ago, I talked about the observer effect. That was talk after my 45-minute talk, or before, I forget which, but anyway. So we can think of the observer effect. This is the idea, the principle that observation causes us to collapse the field of infinite possibilities into the one happenstance that we are noticing. And then once we notice something, all other possibilities vanish from accessibility. And so what collapses the field of infinite possibility? Remember, in the field of infinite possibilities, there's not just not enough, there's more than enough. But we don't collapse the field around our more than enoughness because our state of being collapses it around our limiting beliefs. The unconscious, the 95% of us that's unconscious, still collapses the wave, still is operating us, still moves us through our life patterns. And so that's why it's important for us to focus on this part here, our state of being, because that's what collapses the wave. That's what causes the field of infinite possibilities to show up the way in which we expect it to. But we need to make that expectation conscious, and we need to minimize the influence of the unconscious part of ourselves in the process. Now, here we have a picture of planets aligned. Well, as Dr. Jode mentions, that when we have alignment with our thoughts and our beliefs and our emotions and our actions, we create a coherent state of being, and that's what we need to be able to do. But the problem is that coherent state of being may be a coherence around not enough, a coherence around unworthiness, a coherence around being inadequate. And so that doesn't work for us. So we have to address the state of being. How we're being with what we're having is the critical issue of manifesting consciously. And then the opposite, of course, is true, that when our thoughts and beliefs and actions, emotions are misaligned, that becomes problematic. So you can see if you may have a very clear, coherent intention of a greater good, but because you haven't dealt with or looked at or noticed that there's a depth of unworthiness, it's going to work against those best intentions. Can you see how that's so? So we have to create a workaround. We have to create a way of eclipsing this dynamic that our unconsciousness is running us. And so part of the workaround means that we have to refrain from moving away from our discomfort and instead move towards the expression of our passion and purpose. Because our passion and purpose unleash us from being tethered to those limiting beliefs. And we'll see more as to how that's possible next time I talk on October 2nd. So that's what we have to look forward to. So shifting from manifesting unconsciously to consciously is about creating a coherent image or representation of a desired state. So oftentimes we think that the quantum field understands us because we're speaking in English. Well, the quantum field doesn't work in terms of language. It works in terms of images and representations, metaphors, archetypes. And so we have to create a way of having the right image that moves us to an elevated state of emotion, to the depth of and amplitude that it takes for us to train our brain into memorizing that experience as if it's happening now. And then that is sustained, and that creates a way in which we can draw into our life a greater good. So then, with sufficient clarity in order to evoke a positive, elevated emotion, this emotion needs to be sustained over time in order to activate new neural pathways, resulting in a habit of being that is not tethered to the past. Now, I know that sounds like a lot of information, but very simply speaking is that we have to create a new habit of being that only manifests itself with an intense effort to systematically hold that habit of being in the context of the felt state, the felt sense that is happening now. And we have tools to be able to do that with. And we'll be talking about those tools next time. The last thing that I'll say is that train the body to memorize a future emotional state is part of what we need to learn how to do. We need to develop a spiritual practice that enables that to happen. I'll close by saying this, that I have a habit of being where every day we live in Eagle Ridge, which is a development that's in this kind of pine forest that they mow down most of the trees now to build more houses, but that's another issue. Anyway, there's 5 miles of trails through the woods, and so I walk it every day, and I call it walking my talk because I talk while I walk. And I usually have a tape recorder because that's when things start coming through. And it's my custom to walk my talk every day in this sense of talking and allowing what needs to come through to happen. And so recently I've been experiencing, especially since my cancer and going through that whole process, what's coming online now more and more is this thing called higher self. Are you familiar with the concept? You know, people think of their higher self or higher power or spirit or the divine or God or Jesus or whatever is your concept of that part of you that is in that dimension that is untethered to the conditions of your life. You can access that part of yourself. And so I've been noticing that that part of myself, my higher self, is trying to break in to my walks, my talks. And it's suggesting that I no longer say to myself, well, what am I going to talk about this next Sunday? That it suggests that I say, what are we going to talk about next Sunday? And I'm thinking, you know, what's up with this? That my higher self now wants me to change my language. And so I said, okay, I'm going to be doing this talk on manifestation 1.0. So what should we talk about? And so then the higher voice, the higher power, the higher self says, well, how do you want to feel? That's its reply. So here I am asking my higher self to share something relevant to manifesting our greater good. And my higher self says to me in response to what do we want to talk about, my higher self says, how do you want to feel when you're giving your talk? Okay, and so I said, well, no, wait a minute. What do you mean, how do I want to feel? I usually decide how I'm feeling after my talk to see how you all relate to it, and then I decide if I feel good or not. And isn't that how it always is? And so what my higher self is trying to tell me is, no, you've got it backwards. You're not supposed to wait for how your life is to determine how you should feel. You have to feel how you want your life to be and witness it showing up. And so that's what our effort is going to be. Find the feeling of our more than enoughness. Find the feeling of our worthiness. Find the feeling of our capability. And that's what transforms what we're having into a part of what fulfills our passion and our purpose. God bless you all. See you next time.